You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So, Perry, you did a phenomenal amount of show prep here for today.
Well, sometimes I get carried away. You know, it's just one of those weeks where, hey, that's good. That's interesting. I put that in there, too. What the heck? So,
well, I had to replenish my paper supply to get all this out of the printer. And I'm looking at this and saying, we really need 2 hours. If you keep this up, it's going to take 2 hours to get through it.
It's true.
Anyway, I want to go back and just touch on something that Mick from West Seattle called about last week, which was inflation-protected securities.
Sure.
Because inflation has been rather benign. It just has not been a problem. It looked like it was going to be a problem last month as the interest rates started ticking up and inflation fears came along with the proposal to rebuild infrastructure. Of course, we went through this under the Obama-Biden.
Yeah.
Which didn't. It turns out there were no shovel-ready jobs.
Not exactly as shovel-ready as they thought. That's right.
And my guess is, given all of the media attention to child care is not infrastructure rebuilding and a bunch of other stuff that's kind of packed into this bill, the inflation fear of infrastructure programs overtaking the country's GDP has subsided. However, we have mentioned in the past about supply chain problems, and it was not just the Suez Canal. We had those problems beforehand because of COVID and trying to get the ships into port, get them offloaded. It's been a real problem, and it persists. And the net result is we have been short a lot of supply. And interestingly enough, manufacturers are saying we're able to pass these costs on. So I'm thinking that the inflation, not such a big problem over this last month, may soon be rearing its head again by the time we get the final April numbers next month.
Inflation is making some headway. And because of, like you said, Don, the structural issues in the supply chain, inflation is just supply and demand. And if supply dries up and demand is still there as the economy reopens, that can ignite inflation on its own. It's just a matter of the way it works. Too many dollars out there chasing too few goods and services.
So we look at typically people worry about consumer prices, which eventually will follow the producer prices. And producer prices based on March data are up more than 4% year over year. And given what is expected for April adjustments year over year, this could be 6%. And gasoline up almost 9% year over year nationally. And then you can add the governor's desire to tax anything that he can. It could actually be worse. And that could cause another, let's call it a riptide, if you will, in the market. What's happened over the last couple of weeks in the market is because this inflation fear that was driving interest rates up and bond values down, rotation out of technology that's been over the last month, 6 weeks, into energy and financials, That sector rotation flipped rapidly last week. Things that had been going up, all of a sudden, their momentum changed. And we see tech trying to come back right now. And if inflation rears its head, tech may just simply roll back over as it did several weeks ago. I mean, this is very interesting times that we live in.
It is. We're at one of those inflection points where something's going to take over. Either, like I said, either the market's going to drive higher and we're just going to discard all the inflation fears, or inflation's really going to take hold and we're going to get some systemic long-term inflation, and which, you know, the Fed is looking for that. They've been trying to do that for years and haven't been able to do it. And wouldn't that be crazy if, COVID is what finally puts inflation in charge of the economy briefly here?
Well, the Fed has been trying to generate inflation since 2009, and they have proven that they do not know how to do that. But they still, Congress said, you're supposed to, and it, you know, government's here. Yeah, I'm from the government. I know I'm here to help you. We know better. We know what's best for you. There's a lot of issues tied to that one over this last week with the pronouncements from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. But we'll try and pick that up later on in the show. One of the things that's really important to understand right now is that, oh, it's right in the middle of our first segment. We're supposed to promote that we have a new webinar coming up, and we do. This is our monthly stock market update webinar, which will be on the first Saturday of May. That's May 1st, as a matter. May Day. And 9:15, right after the show, you can register at IRI Radio. If you don't receive our weekend review, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Put weekend review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email so we can add you to constant contact. And going back to stocks, the mantra is you should be in the stock market because stocks always go up.
How many times have you heard that? It's constantly referred to by most brokers. Refer to the mountain chart on the wall. Stocks only go up. It's like, okay.
Except when they don't. And part of this is a function of what is your time frame. If you are an academic and you look at stocks over the long term, and there's actually, I think Sean O'Shaughnessy wrote a book about that. If he didn't, then somebody else did. But the problem is, while our lives are long term, our investment horizons seldom are. We have short-term expectations for the use of capital. So assuming that rates of return will average over 80 years is nice to write a paper about and maybe do your dissertation if you're that far along in your education. But when it comes to actually managing your retirement account, 80 years is not a realistic number. We need to know what's going to happen over 5, 6, 10, 20, 30 years into retirement. But those periods of time have substantial drawdowns. You can have 5 to 10-year periods of time where your portfolio makes no progress. It does, however, create some emotional angst.
Oh, it's good. It's good at that. There's plenty of angst out there. That's part of the problem is that you've got long-term expectations and you cannot get those long-term returns because no one that we work with anyway has so much money that it just sits there and you can just look at it. That is the view from academia. You know, that's what if you're going to write a paper, that's what it's on. You just have a pool of money that sits there, and that's not people's lives. If you're trying to fund your retirement, you know, your mortgage payment is still this month, and all of your bills are this month, and it doesn't matter what the stock market's doing, but you're in this long-term frame of mind for the stock market, and nobody's looking at, well, what's happening right now? What are we doing now? And that's critical. We do that. We watch what's going on in the market currently, and it's just a life-changing event when you know that if the market begins to have a huge drawdown, you're not going to be part of most of that. You're going to get to sidestep that, and that's a huge change in the way you look at risk in the market, because you're not just saying, well, I'm just going to buy a bunch of stuff and hope it works out over the long term, because you know my like I said, your electric bill is still due next month, not in the next 10 years.
So on a monthly basis, the market can be down 10 to 20% very frequently. And generally, most people use a model based on modern portfolio theory that assumes your middle name is Rumpelstiltskin. You are going to sleep through every drawdown and not panic, and everything will recover. It's just the time frame that's a problem. The tech bubble crashing was 15 years to full recovery. Most people didn't sit through that. I think we actually had one caller a few years back that said he did. He just never sold anything. And, of course, he eventually became whole. But that begs the question of what if you had managed to exit shortly after it started dropping? Because you'll never know where the absolute day of high is or the day of low. But when the trend changes, we believe you should adapt to the new trend. And if you have not attended any of our webinars in the past, we explain what we do. Just go back to our website and under IRIRadio.com. Go to the video tab and look at the March webinar. And if you think, well, that couldn't be that easy, could it? Well, then go look at the January one and find out how well it worked through last year, when the market, the S&P 500, was down 35% in a matter of 6 weeks. Fastest, most severe drop we've ever had, with the fastest recovery we've ever had, which means that you could have been Rumpelstiltskin last year, and you would have waked up in December and not known anything exciting happened at all.
Except you never know that going in. That's always that 2020 hindsight is very convenient. That's what people talk about all the time. Well, we should have done this. Look at what happened in the market. But you never know. You never know when the market's down 30%. Is it going to turn around right there? Or are we back in tech bubble territory? Or are we back in 2008 territory where we're going to have another 30% leg down here? And you don't get to know that. Looking at it going into the future is much different than looking back and saying, well, look, that's okay now. And you just don't know, which is why we always say you've got to be prepared all the time for those big drawdowns, because you never know when they're going to persist. You never know how far down is. That's the problem. No one knows. In every big drawdown starts as a small one. So you always have to look at them with the eye that, well, we don't know where this is going. So let's make sure we don't get burned. Let's make sure we don't blow up our portfolio here, so that when this does return, we're going to have plenty of cash to move back in. And again, that's not market timing. We never make a bet on when that's going to happen. We let the market tell us how that's going to work, and we follow the money. You know, where's the money going here? Are there asset classes that are attracting cash and money's flowing in? Prices are going up. That's where we want to be. Or is everything right now just hemorrhaging cash? Everybody's running for the hills, and it's like it's time to step aside and let this settle before we try to figure out where we can make some money here. But that we can do. We can follow the money. We can look at the trends and say, here's the strength, here's the weakness, and we can at least stay out of the weak stuff. And like Don was saying, we have a webinar coming up in May 1st, right after the show here, and you can register for that at IRIRadio.com. Just go to IRIRadio.com, go to the webinar page, give the registration link a click, and you're going to get an email back. And on the first, just click that link after the show. You'll be live online with us, and you'll be able to see our screens, see our charts, see what we're talking about when we're talking about these trends. You'll get a much better picture of what's going on out there and where we may be. And we also always save plenty of time for questions from anybody who's online with us, and we stay until we get them all answered. So it's a very good time to add a little clarity to your investment life. If you want to talk to us this morning, feel free to give us a call, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Or email your question to help at IRIRadio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Well, let's make it higher. Let's take it higher. Take it higher. That's what everybody wants to do. As we watch the Dow fallen below cash, actually out of the 13 sectors, it is the worst performing sector over the last month. That is schizophrenic.
And it's one of the things that, you know, we had energy in our portfolios, and you know, we're making money, we're doing well, and then we weren't. And that's when they need to come out of your portfolio. That's a perfect example of how that rotation happens. And you want to own them when they're going up, and you don't want to own them when they're going down. And you just need to be paying attention to get that done.
Well, when you say we weren't, that means it changed. I mean, we sold them to preserve our profit position, but we weren't going to hang around and see how bad things might get. Bud from North Seattle has a question about preserving capital. Bud, you're on the air with Don and Perry.
Hey, thank you very much. So I'm 76 years old in good shape, but I'm thinking about staying in the market or getting more out of it into annuities to preserve some of my capital so I don't see the next downturn. Your opinion?
Well, first of all, we both have been previously, in decades past, licensed for insurance. We are not at the present time. There's a variety of types of annuities, and it certainly is an option. It does mean that you no more have any upside, unless, of course, you're using the investment format of the annuity as opposed to a fixed one. Our view of capital preservation is different than your assumption about the market, because we are never committed to being fully invested in the market under all conditions. We have an illustration in the last webinar that I'd suggest you go watch, which would help you perhaps reframe how you manage market risk. What I talked about, and I've used before, is we view the market kind of like you would view a football game. Most of the action occurs between the 30-yard lines. That's back and forth, back and forth. One goalpost is very defensive, typically all cash, and the other goalpost is very aggressive, typically all stocks, and bonds fall in there somewhere along the line. Though, where we were at the beginning of last February and March is we were all bonds. And bonds, cash, and there was a period there where we didn't own some gold. But we were completely out of the stock market because the trends were not favorable. And that wasn't a function of our view, an opinion. It was just watching the data. One of our benchmarks is a cash bogey. We use a short-term corporate money fund. The ticker's FTSM, that's Frank Thomas Sam Mary. And while we don't buy it, it tells us whether or not in the market or various securities are performing better or worse than cash. And we just don't buy anything that's below that benchmark. When things start failing because sellers are becoming more dominant, they fall below cash benchmark. So we go to cash and we hold the cash. But unlike being in an annuity, when things start rising above that, we go back into whatever happens to be the new leadership. We don't just buy what we had before because it may not be in leadership. And that certainly happened last year. We finished the year of 19 in large cap stocks. And then we moved to bonds and gold. And actually increase cash in that process of the first quarter. And then when we came back into the market, we went into small cap stocks because that's what was working in the market. That's rotation, that's sector rotation or asset class rotation from large cap to small cap. And there was sector rotation that was going on also. So having a process to preserve capital is absolutely important. But we do not basically take a position that you should just set money aside and assume it's not going to in a position where it's not going to grow anymore because it's going to give you monthly income. I don't know if that helps you or not.
I guess, yeah, it does. I guess I have a misconception that in some annuities that you can benefit from the upside if you're. It isn't always a straight percentage return.
Well, there are index annuities do offer that, and generally, well, they all have a cap. And for the most part, you're never going to see the cap. You just simply are going to give your money to the insurance company, and they give you a little extra above fixed income. But if the market is a good performer, you'll get enough to say, well, we let you participate. But the only reason the insurance companies do that is because it's a money maker for them. And what you should consider before you do that would be look at your proposal for the first year penalty if you change your mind and want your money back. That often runs as much as 10%. So that 10% is commission. And you know, maybe the guy you're talking to doesn't get the whole thing, but he's going to get a big chunk of it, and his supervising general agent and the regional guy gets a little bit of it. But it's all commission. So just ask yourself, if you're putting $500,000 in here and he's getting $50,000 the month after you have your contract, are you getting enough independent advice to be comfortable with paying this guy $50,000? Now, if you're putting $250,000 in, it's $25,000. But ask the same question. Does he have a conflict of interest? Am I getting sufficient advice that I would be willing to have him write him a check for $25,000? Is that worth this? And you're if right. It is.
So in your case, though, if you're going in and out of stocks, that costs too, right?
Well,
because
we don't we get paid a fee tied to the value of your account. So if you're doing well, then we will too. And the bigger your account gets, the smaller the percentage fee is. If you are losing money, we lose money too. So we are directly tied to preserving your capital, which is exactly what happened in our client accounts last February, March. And we go back to 18, which was the prior big drawdown, the fourth quarter of 2018. The market was down just a shade under 20% in 3 months. And we step aside and moved to cash during that period of time. So that protected client accounts. When the market changed at the bottom and started up, that meant we had more money to invest at lower prices. You've heard the process, you want to buy low and sell high. Well, we sold high so we could buy low, and that allowed us a better recovery than having to wait and hope that recovery was short term, which last year it was, but that's abnormally so.
Okay. So if I want to hook up with you folks, how do I do that?
Well, send us an email or give us a call. I mean, an email would be help@irradio.com. And the phone number during the week is 800-317-9119. But I'd suggest you, if you haven't been to any of our webinars in the past, from what I gather, is that correct?
Not really. I think I maybe have seen one or two, but I don't do it.
Well, the two that I would suggest you spend some time watching would go to iriradio.com, click on the video tab, and watch the January and the March one. Actually, February's a good transition, but both of those will give you a good understanding of how we look at the market. And January, I actually walk month by month through the decision process that saved capital and generated opportunity and positive returns above market last year. And that's something that isn't supposed to happen. I've had guys in the industry argue with me and say, you couldn't have done that. That's impossible. You did not do it. I said, well, we didn't actually generate the return calculation. We had our 401k plan administrator go in and double check the numbers. And so what we generated has been confirmed by an independent third party. And I explained that in January. So that would help you kind of reframe this. And with that, we'd be glad to have a conversation with you.
Okay. I'm going to watch those definitely. And maybe I'll give you a call. I appreciate your information.
Yeah, we'll look forward to having a conversation with you. If you. Assuming you already have a portfolio, we'd do an analysis of that without any charge. And anybody else who's listening, if you've got a portfolio and you're concerned about how on earth are you going to deal with the next market drawdown when it comes, we will give you our view of that. It's a freebie. Not a lot of those left that mean anything, but ours is worthwhile.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. I appreciate it. I'm glad I'm listening to the show.
Well, glad to have you out there, Bud.
Thank you, Bud.
Thank you. Bye.
We are right at the bottom of the hour here. Time for us to get out of here and take a break. We do have open lines. Now, if you'd like to get on like Bud, give us a call this morning at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. If you'd like to get signed up for our next webinar, just go to irradio.com. Head to the webinar page, give it a click, and you'll be signed up right away. And if you go to the video tab, there are all of the webinars that we've done previously are there, and you can see them. There's a lot of great information there. It's a good way to get familiar with what it is we're doing. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at irradio.com and log on for a free report. That's irradio.com. Don and Terry are waiting to answer your questions now at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757.
Hey, well, all right, sir, here we go there, and what are they going to give for? I've a $600 down here, now $10, and now $25, and now $35, and now $50, and now $60, will you give me $60, now $75, $75, another $85 on the bond there?
Well, the market is an auction market, even though we don't see the guys on the New York Stock Exchange floor anymore. Or if we do, they're mostly there for show. But the fact is, as Bud actually was addressing the issue in our last segment, is the issue of risk. And risk is something that most investors really kind of understand it, but they don't really have a process for evaluating it in the current market. The majority of people who are listening to us today, because I know 100% of our clients are not on the other end of this airwave system. It's a whole bunch of you people who are using an advisor or a website, and you're responding to questions about risk. How do you feel about it? How much money are you willing to lose without firing the guy talking to you? And you end up with answers, and each of your answers, perhaps unbeknownst to you, is assigned a numeric value. They add them all up, and voila. Using long-term averages, because the market always goes up, we're going to build a portfolio for you. And the more risk-averse you are, it just means we put less in stocks and more in bonds. We don't care if interest rates go up and your bond portfolio stinks, because you're older or you're more risk-averse. That's what we do, except not here, not at Investor Resources. Because in that process, basically, you assume that there will be a period of time when the market goes down, but eventually, there's that problem word again.
And all those questions on that risk return questionnaire, all those questions are about you. All those questions are about what you're thinking, what you're feeling. The risk is not in you. That's what we want everyone to understand. The risk is in the market, not in you. But none of those questions are about the market. They're always about, what do you feel about losing money? How aggressive do you think you are? All those questions are about you. You're not the problem. You're not causing the risk. The risk in the market. That's where we get our reading on where things are right now, where things stand. Not on how old you are or how you feel about it, but what's going on in the market. That's where the risk is, not in you.
So our view of risk comes from market-generated information. rather than asking you questions about your opinion. Typically, you'd be talking to us or another advisor because you're not quite certain you're qualified to evaluate the risk in the market and you want some help. Well, just getting somebody else's opinion isn't a lot of help unless there's actually market-generated information to support it. And most advisors and virtually every website that runs you through a list of questions is using 30, 40 to 80-year data as their market-generated information, which is not highly correlated to today's economy and political environment. And politics do drive markets, whether we like it or not. So what is going on today, this month, with generated data, market-generated information? That is the important information that's going to determine your risk exposure. So unlike most advisors, when we see opportunity in the market, all of our clients are positioned accordingly. When we see high risk, and it makes no sense to own stocks, all of our clients are out of stocks, which is what happened beginning last January, a year ago, and completely out in February and March and April, and stepping back in May, and recognizing rotation, not because we have the ability to see forward, see the future. Nobody does. And we don't guess. We look at what is the current market condition. What is the current market-generated information? That drives portfolio decisions.
Because that's when we're investing for our clients. We're investing now. We're not investing over the past 80 years. And you just have to ask yourself, do you want someone running your portfolio that's looking at what's going on out there right now? Or do you want someone who's looking at your portfolio and saying, you know what's really important? What happened in 1957? That's very important. Those data points are in your portfolio, and they're just as important as what happened in 2020. That's the 80-year average concept. That whatever happened in 1942, that's just as important as what happened in 2020. It doesn't make any sense. What happened then has no bearing on your portfolio today. That's what's important. We're invested today, and today's investment environment should drive where your portfolio is, not an average that's built over the last 80 years.
So the market is dynamic. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. It's up and down. It's not predictable. If you are simply in a standardized portfolio, bad things are going to happen to you. And what is your solution? The recommendation is just sit still. Quit watching the market and don't call your advisor. Go do something
pretend
else.
Pretend this is not happening. And in 20 years, it'll probably be fine. So don't worry about it. And that really is what the primary risk control measure is in a pie chart portfolio. It's just time. We're just going to wait as long as it takes to be okay. And we're okay with that. We hope you are. We're going to tell you all kinds of things about how the market goes up. We're just not going to tell you there can be extended periods of time where the market goes down, and you're going to have to just sit through it either way. That's what you're getting with that pie chart. We just don't think that's good enough.
Well, we've been adequately trained in that because that is the bulk of continuing education in our field. But after having been uncomfortably disturbed in our business models with the tech bubble collapse and then the great financial collapse, and using modern portfolio theory and using institutional money managers on New York Wall Street, who are the brightest minds in the business, as the saying goes, and watching them lose their shirts and our clients' money in those two bear markets. So, there's something wrong here. This doesn't work the way the marketing material or the big firms who come through and say, hey, we're really great. I had one of those calls on Friday from a Wall Street firm.
Sure.
Hey, we're really the good guys here. We have really great research, and we want to make it available to you. Hopefully, you'll buy some of our stuff. I said, so I gave him some return numbers, and I said, did you do better than that last year? Well, no, we didn't. I said, okay, so I'm not sure I need your research because we're using market-generated information. But the difference between the average investor and an actual professional is the professionals think about risk, and they have a process for dealing with it. Managing risk is much more important than beating some sort of arbitrary index. Now, if you can do that at the same time, that's great. But the first thing to do is follow Warren Buffett's rule one. Don't lose money.
That's a big one. It is so important to not have those big drawdowns so you don't have to spend the next few years trying to make up for the loss you took. Not losing money, preserving capital is just huge when you're trying to build wealth, you know, going forward. When you're trying to increase the size of that nest egg, it's much more important not to take the big hit in your portfolio than it is to, you know, constantly, you know, beat the S&P 500. That's always fun to do, but it's much more important not to take the big loss. And we focus on risk first. The first decision we make is, should we even be in this market or not? And then we go from there. It's never, hey, what's hot right now? Let's go get some of that. That's not trend following. That's tip following. And usually, individual stocks. And hey, this is what I have to own this week. That will almost always get you in big trouble.
So Warren Buffett has, if he has a rule one, he must have a rule two, which he does. Rule one is don't lose money. Rule two is remember rule one. And with that, I mean, you have all the rules you need. And one of those rules, which we use, I explained a moment ago, is we don't own things that are performing less than cash. If it's less than cash, it's losing money. And so our question is, why do you have that in your portfolio when there are other things that are making money? If you rotate into those, you're going to improve your performance numbers, which means you'll have more money in the end. So one of those things that is normally used to protect you from bad experiences is bonds. Well, on our macro list, bonds are below cash. So we don't own any at the present time. As I mentioned last year, we did. That's all our portfolio owned because they were making money. But bonds have risk. Most people don't understand. Particularly bond ETFs, they can lose as much as 20% in a short period of time. That's your safe investment to protect you against stocks, is having something that is almost as volatile as the stock market. But nobody ever talks about it. But market-generated information identifies when it makes sense to own bonds and when they should not be in your account.
Just like everything else, nothing should be in your account all the time. Everything is in rotation in the market. There are times to own things and times to not own things. That includes stocks. That includes bonds. There are just times where it's just not worth the risk to be in there for the return that's available. But you have to be able to track that. You have to know where you are at any given time. We're going to take a break here, but if you would like to find out how we do that, if you'd like to see exactly how we do that, you should sign up for our next market update, which is coming up Saturday, May 1st. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Also, if you're not getting our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, give you a little look at what's going on week by week. You can sign up for that by sending us an email at help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. We need your first and last name, and just put Week in Review in the subject line, and you'll begin receiving that on Monday. If you want to talk to us this morning, we still have a whole segment left. Plenty of time to get your call up on the board. Give us a call at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Investor Resources, the program that sheds new light on your investment strategies. The lines are open at 1-888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Or email your question to help@iriradio.com. That's help at IRIRadio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Well, we believe that, and that's certainly our experience, and which is why we are constantly monitoring leadership in the market. What is strong this month may not be strong next month, but then again, it might. And if it is, we want to hang on to it. If it's strong for 6 months or a year or two, that's great. You want to hang on to it. But if, as energy was strong a few months ago and then lost its chutzpah and became the sector laggard, I mean, it went from number one to number 13, from the first of the list to the bottom of the list as far as U.S. sectors are concerned. Well, now the question is, why are you continuing to hang on to it while it is underperforming? On one of my monitors here, I have gold up on the screen. It was just one of the last things I was looking at before we went to air. But we've talked about gold. We were on another station back in 2011. But in June of 2011, we said, based on market-generated information at the time, you own gold, you should get out of it. It is headed down, and it did. And it dropped until 2016 and started working its way back up. And last year, it finally got above the June 2011 high for a week. And it's now back down below those numbers. I mean, it's back in the downtrend again. So you're going from 2011 to the current year, generally holding an asset because it's in your asset class mix, that maybe you have a 5 or 10% position in it, of underperforming, actually not generating anything except risk in your account. You have an asset that is losing value, which means it obviously has risk, and you're hanging on to it. So you like risk, apparently, without any return.
You just have to remember gold. There's no difference between gold and or the energy funds we were just talking about. Everything is cyclical. There are good times to own it and bad times to own it. And if you're looking at an 80-year average return and saying, well, on average, you know, I'm making 9%, so I should just hold it all the time, it's just not true. It doesn't work that way. You may spend 10 years losing money in an asset class, because over the last 80 years, it's been successful. Own it if it's doing well, but be prepared always to sell it when it's not. That's what we do. That's how you rotate out of the weakness in the market. That's how you stay out of taking that big hit, is that you don't own things that continue to lose money. That's actually how that pie chart's supposed to work. Part of it is supposed to be losing money all the time. That means it's working correctly, and we just think that's backwards. If it's not gonna produce profits for you, it shouldn't be in your portfolio. It just makes much more sense that way.
Well, that applies to other asset classes. Emerging markets are another one we told people to get out of back in June of 2011, and they've had some periods where they've done well. Last year was not well; it had a recovery, but it's really been a difficult period of time. What we often try to get pigeonholed by other advisors and sometimes by clients or prospective clients who have done some study of the market. And they say, well, are you a value investor? We say, well, we can be. Are you a growth investor? Well, we can be that too. How about small cap versus large cap? Well, the answer is yes. The issue is, where's leadership? If leadership is in small cap, you want to own it. But if leadership is in utilities and it has relative strength against the rest of the market, well, then owning utilities is a good place to be. But what if utilities are not generating returns? Then that's not a good place to be. Markets rotate, as the economy goes through its recession, growth, recovery, I mean, this whole economic cycle that we continuously work our way through. And the market says, oh, we're in recession. This is not good. Well, there's certain industries that do really well when the economy is not. That's what you should own. But there's no need to own those when the economy is doing well and other industries are stronger, more profitable, attract more investor capital, because where that capital is going is where prices rise. And you want rising prices in your portfolio. That's how you make money. I mean, you can buy for dividends. Those are typically value stocks. But when a market tanks, dividends do not protect you from capital loss.
And that really is one of the keystones of what we're doing, that the market rotation. And we tell clients all the time, you know, we don't care what makes it into our portfolio. We don't care what's in there. We only care that it's in the strongest part of the market. We want things that are at the high end of the return range. We want those things that have persisted there, not just flashed in and out. And that's how we end up with what makes it into the portfolio. But we don't care what gets in. We are not focused on any individual asset class or area of the market, which happens a lot professional investors. You know, I'm a small cap investor or I'm a value investor. We don't care what makes it in. We just want it to be in the strong part of the market. We want it to be getting good returns, and we're going to leave it there until that changes. And the label you put on it just doesn't matter to us. That's not what counts. What counts is, are we making money here or not?
So there are different factors. We just mentioned a couple of them, value and growth. There's also what has developed over the last few years in the industry, low volatility. People are uncomfortable with things that have high volatility or high beta. Well, high beta is what you want when things are going up. High beta is not what you want when things are going down. So one of the alternatives has been a sales talk. You don't like the volatility in the market? Well, we have a low volatility product here, which means we're going to reduce your profit potential by structuring this so it doesn't move around a lot, just to keep you happy. Now, is there a time to buy low vol? Yes, when it's in leadership. Should you buy concept? We had an individual call a couple of weeks ago, and we've had a couple of calls over the last month or two about lithium because of the demand for batteries. We owned lithium, and during the period of time we owned it, when we sold it, we had nearly a 50% gain over the months that we owned it.
We got a big charge out of that.
Well, thank you.
Sorry.
That was a bad, bad
time. I apologize. Yes. I've just made Mike quite angry, yes. But
you caught me off guard. But lithium has not been the place to be since we sold it. I mean, and you could say, but, you know, the car business is going to need it. Well, yes, they are. And so is your iPhone and your Google phone or your Android. They're all going to need more battery power. How about the electric planes that are actually being built and used for short-term commutes in New York? Maybe they're just using them to get them out of town.
But, quick, right?
But lithium, like any other commodity, has a time to be in it and a time to be out of it. And that is true of the entire market.
And you want to buy the asset class or the asset return information, that market information, not the narrative. You never invest based on the concept or the story. It's like, hey, that's a good story. You should go check it out. But you have to look at the underlying securities that you can buy and buy it based on the data there, not on how good the story is, because that's always a sales pitch.
Well, and there's lots of stories around right now.
Tons of them, yes.
Some of those come through the SPACs, those special situation deals that some famous person says, well, we're going to raise money for Well, we don't know yet, but we're going to find something that looks really hot. Yeah, so give us your money while we go look for it.
Send your money now. That's the answer. That's right. Hey.
Yeah, those are creating some concern with the Securities Department, and I think this next year we'll probably see fewer of them as regulations, increasing regulations, come to the forefront. Well, at the end of every month, on the first Saturday of the new month, we always have a webinar about the stock market update. You can register for that at IRIradio.com, IRIradio.com. You want to see what we do and what they're like, click on one of the past ones that we've done this year, and there's more there. They're educational. They're never duplicated. They're always different. We're about out of time. Lord willing, we're going to be back next week. If you want to talk to us during the week, it's 800-317-9119.